Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm Michael Steele, yes, and I'm still a Republican, believe it or not, despite what you may think. We're still holding down the ground for those common sense Republican values and ideas. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. I'm glad you are with me again for another great conversation. You can also remember to find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, tune in or wherever you get your podcast on. I know I love it when you give me that 5-star review and share us on social media. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele, and don't forget to do that download thing. Well, I'm excited about my friend who's dropping by this week for a conversation. It's been a long time. She thought I took her off the Christmas list. I'm like, no, not at all. Alice Stewart is still on that Christmas list. She's a great commentator, political commentator over at CNN, resident fellow at Harvard University, the Kennedy Institute of Politics. She's an Emmy award-winning journalist and a veteran senior communications advisor on a number of presidential campaigns. Welcome back to the Funhouse, Alice.
Thank you, Michael. It's so great to be here. I'm glad that I'm still on your Christmas card list. I'm glad you know how to pronounce Harvard.
Yes.
And I am glad to have this conversation, even though it's over the phone. The last time I saw you, we were at a conference in Miami.
Yes.
And I think we should do that again.
Oh,
Next time we talk, it needs to be in Miami.
I agree with that 100%. Well, I'm glad you could take a little time. There's been a lot of crazy going on. I want to tackle some of it. So I think just as a refresher to begin at the beginning, to sort of help set some context for the rest of our conversation, give us a little bit of your journey in politics, broadly speaking, but certainly in Republican circles. You're still a Republican, I take it?
I am. I am a loud and proud and vocal Republican. And in the beginning, as you say, I was a news journalist for many years and worked in Little Rock. And my first transition into politics was to serve as communications director for then Governor Mike Huckabee.
And I think that's the first time we actually kind of,
yes,
because I was Lieutenant Governor of Maryland. He invited me down to Arkansas to spend some time with him. And I think that was the first time we really got in the room together.
Yes. And I'm glad we have stayed in touch. And it was great. This was, you know, years ago, but I was able to work on his 2008 presidential campaign. And then I continued in politics. I was Deputy Secretary of State in Arkansas. So I know a little bit about how elections are actually supposed to be run on the state level. And then I worked with communications director for Michelle Bachmann, then Rick Santorum in 2016. And 2020, I worked with Governor Huckabee again, and then with Ted Cruz. So we were down to the wire in 2020 with former President Donald Trump. So it was certainly an exciting time. But when that was done, I moved to DC and I got the job as a political commentator at CNN and doing media consulting. And now actually, as a former fellow, I'm on the board at the Kennedy School at Harvard and do all kinds of different things. But yes, I'm still a loud and proud Republican. And I like to think that I have not checked my common sense at the door.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of people like yourself and me.
So let's pick up on that point, because it's important the way you put it, that sort of common, we were all, at least I was brought up in as I'm sure you were too, in this idea of common sense Republicanism. It was very pragmatic. It was very, very much focused on individual liberties and rights. So it had a sort of libertarian kind of bent to it. But it was very much focused on this idea of how, you know, government is a limited purpose entity. You know, it has a role, but it's a limited role. It's not the be all and the end all in our life. And certainly individuals get to make the final decisions and have the final say in how they live out their American dream. When you see where we are today as a national party, and even more locally in states like Arkansas, where you were on the playground there, for me in a state like Maryland, even though we're outnumbered by Democrats, there's still a very strong Republican presence politically in the state. How do you assess what's happened, and how do you identify the changes that you've seen in the party, specifically philosophically, where we seem to be less interested in those common sense, pragmatic values and virtues espoused by Eisenhower and Reagan and Bush, for something a little less so today?
I think, you know, the easy way to assess it, I think, is we've gotten more geared towards the personality of politics instead of the policies. And at the core of many of these people, you see that support the former president. I'm confident that they still believe in the same values and principles and policies that make the Republican Party, as you say, limited government, individual responsibility, free markets, national security. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, at the core of Republicans in the Republican Party. But unfortunately, the personality of the previous administration and President Trump has really made headlines and certainly garnered a lot of attention. Look, you know, I've been across the country. I've been to the flyover states. I've been to these states that feel like they didn't have a voice and people weren't fighting for them. And yes, a lot of people in Arkansas felt like no one is my guy in Washington. And right. They look to Donald Trump as that person, as someone who is going to dam the torpedoes and clean the swamp and drain the swamp and do all of the things that they would like to do if they were in office. I just think it's an unfortunate distraction when we have, you know, the tone and tenor and the tweets and the name calling and the just distractions that I think is the reason, the big reason why we lost the House and the Senate and the White House under that leadership. The policies were the same. And I think a lot of the people that the suburban white Americans that were previous Republican voters left because of the personality and the tone. And I think the more we can get back to focusing on policies, that's the only way we're going to get forward. I've played enough team sports to know if you're 0-3, you got to change the playbook.
And you do But that's going to say, but here's the irony in this. If I guess that's a good way to put it, irony. So you're talking about the tone and the tenor. You're talking about the sort of move away from these mainstream values. But it was, you know, in fact, it was the guy who you stood with in 2016, Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, and a host of others who warned that this guy that everybody was, you know, thinking was going to be this great, political savior to come in and make them feel better about themselves and pay attention to them and drain the swamp. They warned us that that's not who this guy was. They called him out and got vilified by him. I like to put it punked on in many occasions by him, and then capitulated to the very bucket of crap that Trump was putting out there. How do they reconcile that? How do these folks, not to get you to speak for Ted Cruz specifically, but how do these folks now come back and try to make the correction when, as we just heard Lindsey Graham and even Ted Cruz a couple of weeks ago, but Lindsey Graham this past week, well, this is the party of Trump, and if y'all don't believe it, basically get out. I mean, what are my options here?
Well, I'm not going to speak for Ted, but if I remember correctly, he called Trump a sniveling coward and leave his wife the hell alone and all kinds of things. Obviously, in the heat of a very heated primary battle. And look, when we had to drop out, it was hard to get on the Trump train. But Ted did it before me because we realized that the policies we want, and the number one issue for me at the time was Supreme Court justices,
right?
Because that has a long-term impact. And when Trump came out with the list of judicial appointments that he was going to use, Ted got right on board. I was able to get on board. I think a lot of social conservatives were able to get on board because that's an important issue. And you go with the person that's the head of the party and the policies that you want to see shepherded through, that's where you put your loyalty. And look, I get frustrated oftentimes when the media and critics and Democrats phrase it as everyone is sucking up to Trump and kissing the ring, when the reality is they're listening to the people back in their districts, and the people back in their districts, not as much they support Trump, but they continue to support these policies. And people know that if they don't support the titular head of the Republican Party, which unfortunately right now is Donald Trump, then they won't get reelected. And they need the support of their constituents who do support the former president. That's why we're seeing these elected officials continue to stand by him. And many of them agree with a lot of what he's doing. Many of them, I'm sure you talk with them also, Michael,
right?
And privately they'll express their disdain.
Don't get me started on the private conversations. Don't get me started on the private conversations.
Right. Yeah, they express disdain and disgust with a lot of what has happened, and especially with the insurrection on January 6th and the questioning of the elections. But so that being said,
I was going to say, on that point, I'm glad you went there. So all of this, I mean, I can nitpick over the policies. I don't think there was any policy outside of the tax law that this administration, infrastructure week for 4 years, you know, no healthcare policy at all, nothing to address crime, nothing to address some real other systemic issues in the economy beyond tax cuts, for which landed largely for people that we know in the top 1%, you know, where we have to, you know, when you visit the house, someone parks your car for them, for you. So, you know, I will debate the actual policy, you know, efforts of the former president. Look, Supreme Court justices, okay, I like those guys, but hey, kind of upholding the status quo as far as I can see on big issues, because, you know, we're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. I still contend that's not happening, and I still contend healthcare will remain Obamacare, and this court won't do anything about that. So we'll touch on the margins on things like voting rights, which, again, goes against the sensibilities of a party that stood for voting rights, in fact, put in place the first voting rights in the Constitution under the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, and supported that effort. So it's, what policy are these folks relying on in support of Trump when we embraced Russia and Putin? We embraced, we turned our backs against free markets and our allies, and engaged in trade wars. We planted a flag in Jerusalem with the U.S. Embassy, but I don't know what it is these folks are kind of still celebrating grievances over in light of all these other things that you can point to that are problematic for the party going forward, which go to your first point, why we lost, why we're 0-3. White House, House, and the Senate.
Right. My view on how people, and from my standpoint and others I talk with, you know, they did have a few successes in the Trump administration.
Right.
Obviously, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, as you mentioned, tax cuts was important. Supreme Court nominees was successful because of Mitch McConnell. And,
right,
you know,
right,
the climate change proposals, withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, I think was really important. You mm-hmm. know, whether they wanted this or not, there was some progress on judicial reform at the First Step Act. I think that was meaningful and helpful. But to the bigger issues, immigration, you know, build the wall and Mexico will pay for it, that was an absolute and complete failure. And, you know, repealing and replacing Obamacare, it was another complete failure. But what we're seeing, people like the way that the president stood up to these other countries. You know, they like the way he treated our NATO allies, which I didn't think was very helpful, but right. they appreciated his take no prisoners attitude. And that's why they continue to support him. And the unfortunate thing, to get back to, you know, the issue that I think is going to be front and center for a while, is all of those things I think are were natural Republican success stories that he should have addressed and promised to address.
Right.
What we saw with him questioning the integrity of our elections and questioning and calling for a halt on the certification of the Electoral College votes and calling for people to go to the Capitol and incite this insurrection, and he can say that he has no culpability in that. That is not true. He does. Rudy Giuliani does. Don Jr. does. They incited this insurrection. And I think I'm glad to see that now we're seeing people face the music for this. And right. Someone was sentenced today and it's a federal crime for his role in that. I think the bigger long-term impact is sowing seeds of doubt amongst people in this country about our election process. I have always had confidence in the election process. And yes, there are some areas that need to be addressed sure. and corrected and fixed, but to question the election outcome is wrong. And that's why we're seeing Democrats now are trying to federalize the elections. Be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. If you want to address election issues, then the Democrats are going to take it to a whole different level, and we don't need that. I think the more Republicans can reassure the American people about the integrity of our elections, make sure that we keep control of our elections at the state level, that's important.
Yeah,
and
but
I'm afraid that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you, Alice, and I'm a strong proponent of, you know, having worked in this space for a long, long time, and now serving on the board of the nonpartisan U.S. Vote Foundation, which is all about, we work with, you know, state election officials in every state and the territory. So it's have a unique perspective on this. And I agree with you. I don't want to see our national elections or any elections federalized. I think the federal government plays an important role in setting and correcting bad behavior. So when you engage, as we've seen, in making Black people have to count the number of marbles in a jar before they could vote, or you, you know, put one polling place in a community of, you know, 800,000 people, those types of systemic and racist behaviors need to be corrected. But here's the rub. You're looking, you know, you're saying the states should be the place that we rely on and trust. It is the states that right now, in unfortunately, in the control of members of our party, who are making it harder, who are now in response to elections that the election results of 2020, which is ironic. It's not the down ballot races they're concerned about. It was just the presidential ballot. So I don't know how these elected officials were running around saying that there was fraud. Say, well, oh, there was no fraud in my race, but the presidential race, dude, you're on the same ballot. So don't play me for stupid, number one. But then number two, the response to that by state Republican officials has been, okay, we're now taking control away from the Republican Secretary of State, who actually followed the law in the case of Georgia and the Constitution, both the state and federal constitutions in Georgia. And instead, we want to put it in the hands of the legislature if we don't like the result. How do we not think the federal government's going to have a response to that kind of action?
Well, so many things I can address that you talked about. To your point, which is spot on with regard to, if we're going to question the outcome of the presidential election, some of these congressmen need to watch out because they might lose. You know, if the vote that the person cast for the president on the same ballot voted for you, then you need to watch out because
right, to your point, Alice, so people understand, I can't take your ballot, Alice Stewart, and say, oh, there was fraud and corruption at the presidential level, but everything else on the ballot is fine. You can't, that ballot is spoiled. When you spoil any part of the ballot, the whole ballot is spoiled. So that's, so people understand what you're saying there. You're absolutely right. You just can't cherry pick, you know, elections and go, well, we'll allow winners in these three races, but not allow winners in those four races on the same
exactly,
ballot.
Exactly. That makes perfect sense to me and you. I don't know why other people don't understand the needle they're trying to thread with regard to calling both sides. I think that's an important part to consider.
Right.
And yes, Georgia and Arkansas and a lot of these states changing the election laws. Some aspects of what they're implementing, I think, is important, but some of it is going too far, and it does invite scrutiny and criticism, and certainly opens the door for Democrats to try and federalize the election. So in my view, I go back to just the pretty kindergarten view of this. And, you know, if this election process and the voters and the elections were good enough for Trump to declare victory in 2016, it's good enough for him to accept defeat in 2020. It's the same process, and nothing has changed other than the fact that he won in 2016 and lost in 2020 and doesn't like it. You know, at some point you have to, at the end of the game, you just get on the sidelines and say, good game, good game, good game, and accept that you lost. And that's the unfortunate thing here, is that we're trying to change the election process because one person refuses to accept defeat.
So before we take a quick break, I want to ask you a two-parter. The first is along those same lines. So how far should we expect this to go inside the party when you don't have election officials, you don't have elected officials like our members of Congress who, even in the midst of what happened on January 6th, went back into the Senate chamber to try to overthrow the election? Okay, so you know, they're storming the gates and you're upset about the very thing that they're storming the gates for, and then you go back and do or try to do the thing that they were storming the gates for. So how much of this big lie is now a part of the new truth for the GOP? What are elected officials now beholden as they're running for re-election and running for office, maybe for the first time, to stand in front of the public and go, Donald Trump did not lose the 2020 election. He was cheated out of it because of fraud. And the second part is this the new go-to that we can expect in 2022 and beyond, that if Republicans lose an election that they don't like or think that they should have won, that these laws are now going to be utilized to overthrow those elections?
Look, there are the people that strong supporters of the president that once he first started sowing doubt on this election, which was before the election, if you recall, he said, if I lose, it will be because of a bad election. He clearly anticipated defeat because he started sowing doubt on the election process before the election even happened, which I thought was absolutely ludicrous. But there are his people and his supporters who have always believed in his philosophy that the elections were flawed, and certainly once he lost. And those people are going to be impossible to get back on the common sense track. But as we say, in my heart of hearts, and I'm sure yours and others I talk to, even congressmen who publicly support this president, they scoff and say, look, rational Republicans, common sense people realize that the big lie is the fact that he won this election. And they realize that he's not going to be reinstated. We need to get past questioning the election outcome and look to the future. There's plenty of areas where we can focus on with regard to the Biden administration to help us win in the midterms and in 2024. And its constant focus on the past is not helpful. And I often remind people, you know, the only reason we're seeing renewed interest in this, obviously there's a new audit in Arizona, and there's been some more questions in Pennsylvania and Georgia. But I just remind people, President Trump and his crack attorney team of Rudy Giuliani and others, they took this to court more than 60 times, 60 right. times to show the Kraken, and they came up with nothing. So if they failed 60 times, and here we are, you know, 6, 7, 8 months after the election, it's not going to happen. And we need to just put that behind us and move on. Because if he can't make this case in a court of law more than 60 times, there's no there.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I just wish Republicans in office right now would say that publicly and help the country move on and help people inside our party move on from this. They don't. And that's one of my big frustrations with them, because they're making a political calculation to the ruination of the country. It's in my estimation, furthering the dissension, giving truth to the lie, and therefore making it harder on the back end, or even currently, to say what you just said, which it is, that's common sense. That's not Republican or Democrat. That's just common sense, objective observation of the facts from the 2020 election. And we can't get them to say that publicly, and we can't get a whole lot of our own to agree to it when the numbers are showing some 60% of Republicans think Donald Trump actually won the election. We got work ahead. We're having a great conversation with Alice Stewart. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to get into a little bit of what this what real conservatives can do to kind of move the agenda forward, so to reposition the party going into the next two election cycles. We'll be back with Alice Stewart right after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Michael Steele, and we have a wonderful conversation with my friend Alice Stewart. She is CNN political analyst. I'll forgive her that, you know. I'll forgive her.
Thank
that
you, Michael.
From my MSNBC perch. But it's good to have us in all spaces and all places, right, Alice?
That's right. We got to have, you know, there's got to be a punching bag on everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. Exactly right. So I wanted to sort of follow up on the discussion about the big lie in the 2020 election, the insurrection, which a lot of Republicans are unfortunately trying to whitewash, you know, calling it, oh, it's just like a tourist visit. Okay, I don't know. I grew up in D.C. I don't know what kind of tourism these members are used to, but that was never what we saw growing up. But you touched on in a number of your answers, you know, this idea of sort of rational Republicanism, sort of, you know, this idea of being able to reestablish these grounds on which, you know, a lot of us join the party and still try to advocate on behalf of principles and policies that we think are good for the country. I still believe, as I'm sure you do, the country is a center-right nation at the end of the day. And that explains 2020. It explains certainly a whole lot of things that we see happening right now on a number of fronts, economic, social, and otherwise. But is there momentum, in your view, for real conservatives? Because all this other stuff to me is just fake, crazy. It's, you know, the Trumpist stuff is not real conservatism. It's not based on you know, anchored principles or philosophies that we heard articulated by the likes of Buckley or others, for example. How can they begin to push back on this within the party itself? Is that possible? I mean, I get it all the time. Are you still a Republican? And I give them two answers. Yes, I am, very much like you say, loud and proud, right? Still am.
Right.
But also because I know it pisses some people off that I still am. So, you know, because the easy thing for them is for folks like us to go away and not call out the abominations and the apostasy that we see happening inside the party. So how do you recover from that when you've got, you know, folks out here now trying to start a third way, other folks saying, turn the lights out, the party's dead, it's done. What's your take here?
My take is similar to, I think, yours and a lot of other people, is that I was a Republican long before Donald Trump came down the escalator.
Amen.
And it's going to take a lot more than him to get me to leave this party that and the policies that mean so much to me. And that is the prevailing mindset I have. And I do believe that the rational Republicans will come to the forefront, because we need to win back the House and the Senate in the midterm elections. And I think that's really important. Right now, people realize that someone the other day said, you know, are we feeding the beast by having Trump, you know, and have all these meetings at golf clubs and right. People come to him, are we feeding the beast? And my take is no, we're giving him a sedative. We need him to just calm down and not get too agitated and realize, you know, we're not kicking you away. We still want you around. Calm down.
But do we really still want him around? I'll be honest with you. I don't. I think he's an abomination. I think he is an apostate to everything that I grew up believing about the party, even in the face of some of the ugly stuff in the history, the recent history of the party. I think Trump has been an avatar for a lot of that, and has really given breath of fresh air to the Southern strategy, for example, and these other strategies that have bastardized Republicanism. I joined the party when I was 17. I grew up in Washington, D.C., all right, Chocolate City, right?
And right.
Look, the crap I took in high school, the day I told my friends who were the sons, I went to an all-boys school, who were the sons of political figures in Washington and the region, looked at me like, dude, what are you high? What are you smoking, right? But I had a belief system tethered to that talked about, you know, those individual rights and liberties. It didn't say that there were good people who were members of the KKK. It didn't tell me that my ancestors came from a shithole country. It didn't tell me that, oh, I need to be afraid of the Mexican or the Hispanic who was in my school because they, you know, we need to build a wall to keep them out. That 17-year-old kid today, that's what the party has said to them. So I just don't think, and the perpetuation and giving him the platform to continue that for me, I don't see it's a good thing. I think we need to be excised of him. Seriously, like the worst cancer you could possibly have. Cut that shit out of your body. You need it gone. I know others disagree with me, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
No,
I
hear you. And if you would, you know, just come out of your shell a little bit and tell me exactly what you think, that would help the conversation. That being said, look, you know, you talk about Buckley. One of the things that I often say to my students at Harvard that are conservative students, you know, Republican students, is he would say conservatism is the politics of reality. And right. The reality is, if we kick Donald Trump to the curb, we're going to lose his base. We're going to lose those people.
Do we need
people.
That base? What is that base
us? Tell me how Republicans are going to win if we get rid of Trump's base.
Okay,
Can I
answer that question? I'll tell you how we win.
Yep.
I became chairman of the Republican Party in the county of Prince George's County, Maryland in 1994. Mm-hmm. I was the chairman of a party in a county that was 80% African American and almost 100% Democrat. the voter registration out of 800 some thousand citizens registered in this county at that time for Republicans was 58,000 Republicans.
Wow.
Do you know what we did between 1994 and 1998? We imposed term limits. We changed the county tax laws that protected home buyers when the newly elected county executive wanted to lift the tax cap on property owners so that they could raise property taxes here in the county. I did that with a band of maybe 30 people, activists, $7,000 worth of financing. So I made the case for what we believed in and what we stood for. The base was the people. It wasn't the party. It couldn't be the party because there was only 58. If every Republican voted to impose term limits and the Democrats didn't want it, it would not have happened. So this idea that we need this base to win elections is bullshit. It's just bullshit because where I come from, I didn't have a Trump base to gain the ground that we did here to defeat the Democrats on taxes, on term limits. I didn't have that base when we put in place, when I led the charge as Lieutenant Governor of Maryland for charter schools. So this idea, we cannot landlock ourselves to a base that is not down with what these principles are, what these policies and these values are, in my view. So I hear what you're saying, Alice, but I just have to reject it because where I come from, I've won without that base. And I don't see how all of a sudden now talking to people about their heritage and calling them names and laying out all this crazy crap and embracing the big lie is going to win me an election. How does that happen?
Well, my take on this is, how is a Republican going to win without that base? Here's my point. 74 million Americans voted for President Trump. Those people are going to, we need to keep them together. We need to keep them in support of the policies. But we also need to win back the disaffected voters that we lost from 2016.
Right.
And if we kick Trump to the curb or his support, there's no way the Republicans are going to win. I'm not saying,
We win tomorrow. We don't win now, but we win tomorrow and we win bigger and stronger tomorrow because we're actually going to be about something that means something to the voters that we're talking to. Because what are we saying to them now? What's our policy? We don't have a platform, Alice. we rejected at our last convention. We rejected putting the platform together. The platform committee is like whatever Trump wants to do.
Well, Michael, you know this. Politics is a game of addition, not subtraction. We need to add to that 74. It sounds like you're trying to make this a game of division, like divide up, the rational Republicans and kick the others to the curb. That's my point, is that we have to keep them engaged and add to them. And we do so by shifting away from the personalities and focusing on the policies. And I like what you said about the politicization of the ruinization of this country.
Right.
We need to get away from that. We need to get back to the politics and the policies of the Republican Party. Look, I'll say this. I'll be the first one to say it. I say it all the time. Joe Biden makes me feel good. He is a man of empathy and compassion. And I love his message of unity and bipartisanship,
right,
even though he has not engaged in any bipartisanship in Washington, D.C., and we're seeing more evidence of that every day. He makes me feel so good and happy, but I hate his policies. I don't like what he's doing with paying people not to work. I don't like what they're doing with the Green New Deal. I don't like the fact that he's letting the progressive dictate a lot of what he's doing. I don't like his policies, and I would much rather have a president that I feel good about the policies, then he gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling because he's a nice guy. And that's
right.
I go to feel warm and fuzzy and good about my preacher at church, not about my elected official.
Yeah.
And I'd love to have it both ways, but if I had to choose, I would rather have a president that furthers my policies than makes me feel good.
Yeah, but the problem is we're not agreed on what, not you and me, but I don't think we are agreed on what that policy is. And that's what leadership requires.
Right.
And that's where the leadership matters, when the leadership helps us clarify what's in our best national interest and what's in our best local interest, because sometimes they can be different. A president is going to focus on some things that a governor wouldn't, and a governor is going to focus on some things that a mayor wouldn't. So, but at the same time, in each of those instances, you're looking at least, and this was the beauty, this is the beauty of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan gave you both of those things.
Right, right.
All right. So he talked about us being a part of mourning in America. The light on the, in that city on the hill was us. All right. I feel as a Reagan Republican, in that sense, that light has been put out. And so what I discovered in the over the, and I come to it a little bit different because I worked with Trump before he ran for president. So I've seen other sides of this equation that a lot of people in politics may not have seen. So I come to where I conclude that it matters to me more than policy, the man or woman who sits at that resolute desk in the Oval Office, because at the end of the day, I can fight Joe Biden, and I told him this personally. I can fight you on the crazy stuff that comes from the AOC wing of the party, and will. And like, I agree with you on the list that you put out there. You and I are simpatico, right?
Right, right.
But I could not have that fight with Trump.
Right.
And I'm not having that fight now. I get castigated, and as I'm sure you do too at times, by Trumpists, because I'm not licking Donald Trump's boot and saying right. that he won the election. I haven't changed my view on family values, on abortion, on the economy, on civil rights as we once talked about them, even things like the environment where we once, you know, led in that conversation. I've not changed in the view, but that doesn't seem to matter with this new iteration, which is why I asked the question is, you know, how do we deal with that going into the 2022 cycle? And if you don't like the results of that election, and Trump says, well, that congressman or that senator or that governor shouldn't be in place because they cheated, is our system now being redesigned to fulfill that wish in preparation for what may come in 2024 or whatever? Where it's not, you know, to your point about making the case, and the point I was saying about what I went through here in Prince George's County, I'm not worried about that 74 million, okay? What I'm worried about is making an honest case to the American people, because if I make the honest and the correct case, I'm gonna get new voters. I'm not doing division here. I'm trying to figure out how we add smartly. I don't want a redneck, white nationalist racist to be a Republican. I don't want them in my party. I don't.
I don't.
I'm very
don't
honest
either.
About that.
I
but
don't either.
That's what we're embracing now. That's what, when the president of the United States is asked directly, will you condemn the Proud Boys? And the best he can come up with is stand by and stand back and stand by, instead of, no, I don't want that in the party. That to me is where we are. And so my question is, who are you adding?
we're adding the white suburban voters who got pissed off.
No, we're not. We're losing them.
What I'm saying is, well, I'm sorry. I thought you meant who do we need to add?
Who are we adding right now?
Right now, we're doing our best to hold what we have. I don't think we're adding right now, but the only way that we're going to win back the House and Senate is to, as I said, we can't use the same playbook. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. I'm not going to use the famous quote, but we can't keep doing that. So we have to hold what we have. And I think, you know, a little bit of Reaganism would be helpful here, as he often said, person who agrees with you 80% of the time is a friend and ally, not a 20% traitor. The problem with Trump is he believes if you don't agree with 100% of what he says and does, then you're a traitor and an enemy and we don't need you. We need to get past that. We need to realize we agree 80%, 90% as Republicans on the policy. I don't agree with the bull crap about, you know, he lost the election or any of that nonsense. But we need to just put that in the past and focus back on policies that unite us and not the tone and tenor that divides us. That's how we add. Right now, we're treading water and holding our own, but we can't continue to do this if we're going to move forward.
Donald Trump will command this stage for as long as he can. And until such time as he's able to put it in the hands of someone who will continue to command it the way he likes to see it done, be it his son or someone, which is the interesting little dance with Governor DeSantis right now. I was laughing that out of the CPAC, the second CPAC meeting, Alice, Trump was out there proudly saying that I won that one. They, you know, by a wide majority in that polling, whereas the one out of Colorado's conservative meeting and a couple of others, DeSantis was beating Trump. So the dynamics are still going to be Trump focused and Trump oriented. And that's the problem. So for all, I go back to the question, who do we think we're going to win with? And who do we think our voters are going to be if we're not standing behind a Liz Cheney? Not only, I mean, conservative, she is a woman, a former leader in the party who was routed because she refused to lie about the elections. That's what the American people see. And I don't know how you build, you can hold that 74 million, but I don't know how you add to it. But that's why we do elections, right? And that's why we have smart communication people like Alice Stewart out there helping people figure out how to have that conversation.
I'm talking about it and I'm not running for office, but I think it's also one last point here to keep in mind, people like Liz Cheney and Kinzinger, you have to look at the bigger picture. Are they popular in their district? Are they going to win? Are they going to represent the Republican values and policies? And we need to keep people running for re-election in races where they're going to win instead of spending our money and resources in races that are just grievances of the former president, because that's a waste of resources when we can be putting it in places where we actually really do need to compete.
Yeah, I agree. But tell that to the once very popular and very successful candidate or elected official before Donald Trump didn't like them because they refused to lie about his election. And that's the problem. And I agree with you.
Yeah, exactly. It will be fun.
Alice Stewart, she's the best. And I knew this would be a great conversation. I just knew it would be. I knew it. I'm really, really grateful for it. I'm grateful for your honesty and your insights. And I really appreciate you very much. Alice, you're great, great leader, great lady. She's a CNN political commentator and doing something at Harvard. I don't know. She does something at Harvard. But anyway. Well,
Michael, as always, it was great to talk with you. And I think the world of you and respect all that you've done in the past and continue to do. And it's a blessing to be part of your show and hopefully meet up again.
Oh, absolutely.
Fancy place in some exotic town.
I was going to say we got a date in Miami, right?
That's yes, exactly.
I appreciate it. Well, that does it for this conversation at this time, folks. A big, huge thank you to our guest, Alice Stewart. Don't forget to, you know, look for this and other conversations from the Michael Steele podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get that podcast load done. And also, you know, show me some love. Give me a 5-star review from time to time. That always helps. Share us on social media. You can follow Alice on Twitter, which I recommend, at Alice Tweet. And you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Until next time, be safe. We didn't even get into the vaccine issue, Alice, because I didn't want your head to completely blow off today. But
maybe you'll give me another shot at that later.
Yeah, absolutely. Be safe, folks. Do the vaccine, please. Just take the vaccine and wear the mask. I mean, just for a little while, so we can at least get herd immunity and start to get on the other side of COVID. Until then, be good. Take care.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.